Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call this Board of Supervisor meeting to order. The date is July 18th. The time is 6:33. I'm going to ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm going to ask our Public Works Director, Matt Machado, to lead us in the pledge. And then if you could remain standing for an invocation, we have Reverend Cheryl Birch from Cheryl Birch Ministries who will be leading.
Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening. Let us come together in prayer. Precious Father, first we thank you and honor you for your boundless and gracious nature and for your abundant provision for all that we need. Your word simply says to ask, that you hear our prayers, and when we call out upon you, that you answer. So we humbly come before you tonight, bringing to you the needs of our county and asking you to bless our Board of Supervisors. I pray in your name that they receive your wisdom, that you would guide them throughout the meeting, revealing your perfect will to them, and that they would respond quickly to your guidance. I ask, Lord, that each of the members of the board find your peace and direction, and that they act and lead according to your word. You said a house divided against itself cannot stand. Therefore, I pray for them to be unified in righteousness for the sake of the county. I pray over the agenda that is set before them today. Please give each member of the board an assurance of what would please you and what would benefit those who live and work in our beloved Stanislaus County. There is a truth out of the book of Jeremiah that in the welfare of the community, we find our own welfare. And all that is done and in all that is said tonight, may we seek the welfare of this county. I ask for your protection, for your amazing grace and love to cover each member of the board, their staff, and all present in these chambers. I ask you, Lord, to reveal yourself to each person and give them joy in you in their lives. Thank you, Father, for hearing our prayers. In your magnificent name we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. We'll be moving on to item four, which is a presentation. It's the 2017 Earl Pride Scholarship recipients. And Annette will be presenting.
Good evening, Chairman Kayser, board members, CEO Risen, and County Council. Annette Patton and Emily Herrera are here tonight to represent the Earl Pride Scholarship Fund. In addition, we have two other committee members, Kami Espinoza and Sheriff Adam Christian, who's not here this evening. The Earl Pride Scholarships are made available through the legacy left to Stanislaus County by Mr. Earl Pride in 1991 for the benefit of Stanislaus County employees. Scholarships are available to Stanislaus County employees and their dependents. This year, the committee chose to honor a total of 8 students as scholarship recipients. And we want to just explain that we didn't do it based upon GPA, because we would hate to compete against these students. These students are our future leaders. It's nothing for them to get 4.6 GPAs. I don't know how they sleep at night or what they get done. But what's really exciting is to see that we have preached to our youth about community service, and these individuals are so involved in community service all the way around, or sports, that we really had a hard time incorporating everything that they do. So these individuals never sleep at night is what we decided. So it's my honor and my pleasure to honor our first scholarship recipient is Ms. Haley Kellner, and her mother is Lynn Kellner from the Department of Child Support Services. She has earned a 4.19 GPA. She has been involved as a library assistant in high school. Haley has earned her associate's degree already at the young age of 19 from Modesto Junior College and will transfer this fall to UC Berkeley. Her major is anthropology with a minor in art history. She plans to become a curator in a museum after she finishes graduate school. I present to you Haley Kellner. Okay. Our next recipient is Mr. John Capodonica, and his mother is Elizabeth Capodonica. She's an employee of the Auditor Controller. John graduated in the top 10% of his class from Ceres High School. He is currently entering his third year at San Francisco State University, where he is majoring in business administration with a concentration in information technology. John is a full-time student, works part-time at Target. He has been involved in the community with St. Vincent de Paul with food giveaways and volunteers with the San Francisco SPCA. He gets points with that because it's related to the animals. John will continue his education at San Francisco State University this fall. Congratulations, Sean. It's the part his mom wants to see. Our next recipient is Mr. Jared Harris, and his father is Aaron Harris with SBT. Jared has earned a 4.33 GPA. He was the class rally commissioner, involved with speech debate, water polo, track, field, mock trials, and swim team. He earned his Eagle Scout Award at the young age of 13. He also volunteers and assists individuals in the community to acquire their GED. Jared will attend UC Berkeley in the fall to major in business administration. And what Jared forgot to mention is he also did some great volunteer work at Animal Services, too. So. Congratulations, Jared. Exceptional. Our next recipient is Mr. Hayden Ferrister, and his mother is Lily Ferrister with Environmental Resources and Parks and Recreation. Hayden has earned a 4.15 GPA. He was involved with marching band, jazz band, and stage crew for performances. Hayden has participated in the Science Bowl, Science Unlimited, and is a life member of the California Scholarship Federation. Hayden will attend San Jose State University in the fall with a major in electrical engineering.
Okay, so I have the next four recipients. We've also come to realize that Haley must have been a very popular name for parents about 18 years ago or so. My first Haley is Haley Acree. Her mom is Lori Denego from the District Attorney's Office, and Haley attends Pittman High School and plans to attend Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. She has an overall GPA of 4.2. For 4 years, she's been a member of FFA, where she has held positions of chapter reporter and the chapter co-vice president. She's also been in band for 8 years, which requires her daily involvement. She's held positions of a line leader, front rank, co-section leader, and first chair. So sounds like she's a very talented flute player. She's also involved with Modesto Pentecost Association Festa Marching. I'd like to quote something Haley said in her her essay to us. She indicates that she was fortunate enough to have grandparents who owned horses. They supported and encouraged her equestrian love, and she knows that her future career involves these magnificent animals. Her ideal occupation would be in equine rehabilitation, where she can help working horses heal from injury and perform at their highest potential. She's, as I mentioned, she's been very involved in school, including sports, and a notable attribute is that she was selected out of her entire junior class to attend Camp RYLA, which is the Rotary Youth Leadership Awards this past year. So she hopes to live a life of service and to leave a positive impact on everyone she encounters. Haley? Okay, we're going to keep the Haley train rolling here. So, Ms. Haley Baker is next. Haley's father is Brian Baker, who works for the Stanislaus County Sheriff's Department, and Haley attends Turlock High School. She plans to attend California State University Stanislaus, and she has an overall GPA of 4.16. So Haley writes that she has kind of actively tailored her experience in school to focus on her educational needs first. Smart girl. She's managed above a 4.0 grade point average all 4 years in her time at Turlock High School, including 6 advanced placement classes in the span of 3 years. She's been involved in various clubs as well, and also in a lot of community activities. So it's very notable that Haley wants to attain a degree in psychology, so specifically child psychology. She notes that children are naturally invalidated because of their age, but if she were able to aid a child's mental health, then common misconceptions can be addressed and improved upon. So that's pretty cool. Some of the clubs Haley's been involved in are Speech Club, Relay for Life Club, Interact Club, the Wild Link Club, Gay Straight Alliance Club, Anime Club, the Art Club, and the Medical Careers Club. She also currently volunteers her services at the Learning Zone, where she's a tutor every Thursday for about 2 hours. So a really cool thing that I read that Haley does also is that she is part of a group that volunteers their time to create blankets for people at Emmanuel Medical Center in Turlock and at the retirement home. So they've donated approximately 50 blankets, and all have been received with appreciation and smiles, of course. So we present to you Haley Baker. Our next recipient is Abraham Galvez. Abraham's father is Miguel Galvez, and he is with the Planning and Community Development Department. Abraham currently attends Pittman High School and plans to attend California State University Stanislaus. He also has an awesome GPA. It's 4.20. So Abraham also writes some really cool things. I mean, he notes that he believes his best qualities are his willingness and aptitude to taking a lead. And he has a strong sense of determination and focus, which he believes has led to his academic success. He says he not only stresses respect in himself, but also in his peers, whether it be toward their teachers or toward one another. So again, another go-getter. He's taken 4 AP classes in his senior year alone, so no senioritis there. And in the first semester of this school year, he had an overall GPA of 4.67, so all A's. Plus those AP classes, that's a phenomenal GPA. Abraham has also been involved in several clubs. He's been involved in the Pittman High School Game Club for 4 years. He's also been a band member, where he's played an instrument since the 5th grade. He is part of FBLA, Future Business Leaders of America, which very importantly, recently his group competed for a group project called Computer Game Simulation, which he led, and they placed 2nd in the state. So that's awesome. He's also part of the Mathletes because he enjoys math very much. And they too competed in a large nationwide math challenge where they created a mathematical model of the various effects changing sea levels would bring on national parks. He's part of the Philosophy Club. He volunteers at Castle Air Museum and with his church youth group every Wednesday at Sacred Heart Parish in Turlock, where they have done such things as feeding the homeless, holding fundraisers, and discussing Catholicism. So, Abraham. Our last recipient is one of our county employees who we decided to award, and unfortunately she's not here. I can't imagine why. Oh, she is here. Okay. I was going to give you an out, Rocio. So Rocio's really awesome. So she works for us at Child Welfare Services, and proud to read that she's a Riverbank High School graduate. So I'm a fellow Bruin graduate. That's pretty awesome. She already has her BA in sociology and graduated previously magna cum laude from California State University Stanislaus. She's attending now San Joaquin Delta College in an effort to obtain a master's in social work. So she has a GPA there of 3.81, while she also takes care of her three children, who sound like they're very involved in a lot of activities. She works full-time, as I mentioned, at Child Welfare Services. And she notes that she's applied for the scholarship for a couple of reasons. One is that she feels appreciated by the county for being eligible for this award because she works with us. And then secondly, applying for this is validation that she is indeed pursuing her dream of becoming a psychiatric nurse. I'd like to read verbatim what she says about her educational goals, because it's pretty cool. She says, despite my limited English and acculturation at the time I graduated from Riverbank High in 2000, not knowing anything about college, I chose the only career I knew helped people at the time, social work. I graduated in 2006 and have been working for Child Welfare since. Simultaneously, I worked at the psychiatric hospital for 3 years. I fell in love with psychiatric nursing. It is the perfect combination of social work and nursing, is in high demand for qualified professionals, and it requires a special set of skills that she's very interested in. So she hopes to tentatively start the nursing program in 2019. It's really impressive that while maintaining a full-time job, being also a full-time mother, single mother to three children, she acts as a volunteer, as a liaison for Child Welfare Services and for Parents United, which is an organization specialized in assisting victims of sexual abuse. She acts as a liaison for the Valley Mountain Regional Center, who specializes in serving the special needs community, and for Leaps and Bounds, which provides mental health services to young children and their families. So Rocio is just a true shining star here in the county, and we're very, very pleased to be able to award her as well.
Getting close.
Crowd in. Stand side door.
Congratulations to all of you. And before you leave, I just want to tell you that I remember being high school. I remember college. I remember giving up my time, playing in the band, playing in sports, and my grades being nowhere near yours. And that's it's not to be funny, but there's a true commitment, and it gives the board great solace to know there's folks like you out there who are going to be replacing us. And remember, because your parents are county employees, except for Rocio, probably is the only one. They're doing the great work of which we get to sit up here and do things, but they're the ones actually making sure we're safe at night, making sure our roadways are safe. And so thank them when you go home on behalf of the board, all the parents. We appreciate it. Okay? Congratulations. And you guys don't have to stick around anymore. Okay. That was a great way to start a meeting for sure. Now we're going to move on to public comment. Public comment is an opportunity for anyone to speak on anything that is not on today's posted agenda. I have two speaker cards. The first one is David Abel.
Good evening, Chairman and Council. I just come down here to find out, it is on the agenda, what your plans are for the State Route 132.
Actually, that's C2, item C2. So we'll give you an opportunity. So we'll pull that off. We'll have staff come up here, and you can comment at that time. Thank you. And I'm going to ask anyone. Next up, I have Mr. John Main. And I'm going to ask you state your name. If you do come up and speak, state your name for the record.
Thank you. I am John Main. Last name is M-A-Y-N-E. Hello, supervisors, Chief Executive Officer Risen, I believe Mr. Doering. And was I wrong? Okay, so. Good. I'm a county employee, and I wanted to talk about county policies very briefly. There's one county policy in particular that I have violated hundreds of times, and I will probably violate tomorrow. That policy is that when someone asks you directions, you are to tell them you don't know and quickly walk away from them. That is not a good policy on several fronts. Number one, it's just not very nice. Number two, it's dishonest. And number three, it's not increasing safety. If you're doing that to people, it's pretty clear what you're doing, and that's not a good thing to do. The safety policies have other items in there that are not good for safety or for people. The idea that you should check underneath your car from far away before entering it is not reasonable and does not improve safety. There are other issues, and I sent an email about 4.5 years ago. I don't know where it ended up, and I don't know if any of you ever saw anything, but there are other, in any document this large, you're going to have some drafting errors. Some of those drafting errors may have effects that you don't intend. Notably, there's a drafting error, I believe, in the election contributions area, which says that county employees cannot receive money from other county employees, and there's no exception to that. That's not quite right. You can't directly solicit county employees only. What it says is you can solicit them, but you can't take the money from them. That's not quite right. There are the exceptions of Government Code 3025. I think you guys all know that. I think it's just a drafting error. The second thing is that the outside employment for attorneys, the way it's written is not going to achieve the things you want to achieve. At the present, outside attorneys who are employed by the county can represent family members in almost anything because the wrong word is used in the code. The word that is used is unprotected. What you mean, I think, is uncontested. That's a big difference, and I think it's important. The other thing is the sexual harassment policy. It just has a little bit of a drafting error, which causes essentially all written communication to be barred. I'm certain that is not the county's intent. It's entirely possible that you were aware of these things or my email, whichever, and that it's been determined that I'm mistaken. That's fine. But I did want you to know what my concerns were so that the county could do the best it could. I hope these comments have been helpful. And if you have any questions, I'm certainly easy to find.
Yeah, I think they are going to be helpful. I appreciate you coming in, and I'm glad you recognized Jack Doering next to me. It's Tom Bowes sitting in. Jack has been out ill, so we do have a stand-in, and I forgot to introduce Tom in the very beginning. So
all right, I will just hide underneath the.
That was good. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anyone else for public comment? The other two cards I received are on item C2. Also, any other public comments? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to the consent calendar. The consent calendar is any item that is marked with an asterisk. And we are going to pull C2 for comment. And are there any board members that would like to pull any other items?
I think it's already C2. Is it? Actually,
I'm sorry. Doesn't need to be pulled. And is there any comment on any items on the agenda from the audience? Seeing none, I will bring it back to the board for action.
Make a motion to approve all consent calendar items.
A motion, do I have a second?
Second.
A motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, motion carries 5-0. On to item C2, Matt Machado. This is approval and adopt the recommended to Caltrans Alternative 2 as the locally preferred alternative for the State Route 132 West Expressway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good evening, supervisors, Mr. Risen, Mr. Bowes. It's good to be here. Matt Machado, Director of Public Works. And I do have a brief report to discuss the item before you. The title of this item is Approval to Adopt and Recommend to Caltrans Alternative 2 as the locally preferred alternative. Okay. So the phase we are in on this project development is the environmental phase. It's actually called the project approval and environmental documentation phase. It includes a 30% design and an environmental document, which entitles us to move forward to final design, right-of-way purchase, and construction. This current phase of project development kicked off with this document as a notice of availability on January 12, 2017, just recently. The public hearing for this environmental document was held on February 22nd. The circulation for this document was from January 18th through March 4th. So comments have been received from the public. Our consultant team is working to respond to those comments so that the document can be finalized. And currently, local agencies are weighing in on their local preferences. So I'll cover the project as a whole, and then we'll get into the alternatives here shortly. The project overall is located between State Route 99 and Dakota Avenue, and so this map shows the project limits. A little bit of history. So in 1956, the proposed freeway corridor for SR 132 was adopted by the state of California, and there were resolutions of support from Stanislaus County and from the city of Modesto. In 1958, the state of California purchased most of the property needed, the 79 acres of the project area is currently owned by Caltrans. Currently, the two build alternatives that are being considered in the EIR are both consistent with this adopted freeway corridor and are identified through the EIR report and environmental assessment. Just for information, EIR is the CEQA side of it, and environmental assessment is the federal NEPA side of it, so it's a combined document. The purpose of this project is to improve regional and interregional circulation within Modesto and Stanislaus County, to relieve traffic congestion along the existing SR 132 Mays Boulevard, and to improve operations for the existing and proposed transportation network. A bit about the project description, briefly. The proposed project involves the ultimate construction of a four-lane freeway south of Kansas Avenue from Dakota Avenue to east of State Route 99 at Needham Street. The project would also include improvements on State Route 99. The PM stands for post mile, so that's post mile 15.7 to post mile 17.5. That's nearly 2 miles of improvement of State Route 99. These elements would improve the system connectivity between the two freeways. And here is a bit more of an overview with more detail. On the bottom left are some color coding. The red shows the areas that would be at grade, so the roadways that would be at the existing ground level. You can see that on the west end and on the eastern end where we connect into downtown Modesto. The blue is the portion that is below grade. It's down, it's dug into a trench. That is to mitigate noise and aesthetic or visual impacts. And then the yellow is the portion that is above grade. That is on top of the stockpiles, and that's the portion where it goes over top of State Route 99. I know the coloring on the big screen is not great. Hopefully you all can see it on your screens. Looks good on mine, but mine's modern. Let's like to share a bit about project phasing. So phase one, the initial construction phase, is estimated $82 million. Both build alternatives, the alternative one and alternative two, are the same in the phase one project scope. This would construct a two-lane expressway on the proposed alignment from Dakota on the west end of the project to Needham Street overcrossing on the east end of the project. Phase one would have full access control, meaning no street connections, and there would be grade separations at all intersections from State Route 99 to North Dakota Avenue. Here is a picture of that first phase, phase one. The red line denotes the two-lane configuration with a modest connection at State Route 99. The next phase and the final phase of this scope of the EIR is phase two. It's expected to begin construction in 2026 and be completed by 2028. Phase two would be constructed once funding is completely available. Phase two would result in a four-lane expressway, and phase two would improve the connection between State Route 132 and State Route 99 by adding auxiliary lanes and a direct connector ramp from the one facility to the other. That would be a flyover ramp. Here's an image of alternative one, and I will point out, I'm going to show another image of Alternative 2, and there's not much detail in this map, but I have more detail coming. But I would point out that Alternative 1 and Alternative 2 are identical west of the 99, this area. They are identical. The only differences are at the connection of 99, and we will cover that here shortly. So there's an image of Alternative 2, 1, 2, they're the same except for the connection at 99, and we'll get into that. So here is a more detailed comparison, and I have one more map after this for more detail. But the primary difference, and I'll use my pointer here, is that on Alternative 1, there is a off-ramp from the 99 southbound that terminates up at the top of 132, where 132, whoops, how did I just do that? Hold on, sorry. Where it would, that would be an intersection at 132 and the Needham connection, and that would be elevated. And what that does is this off-ramp, because of its distance to the intersection, would eliminate the ramps at the Kansas interchange currently, the southbound off and the southbound on. And so this alternative eliminates that connection. This alternative, the Kansas Bridge right here where the pointer is, has to be realigned to the north. And that's a major impact as well. So there's a bit more impact with this area. And then the last significant impact is where the off-ramp connects to the intersection and then it goes south into the downtown onto the 5th Street connector. But you'll see that this angle right here is a bit wider than the Alternative 2. So there's more impacts to that neighborhood there off of Elm. Alternative number 2 doesn't have the intersection at the top, and so therefore we can keep the ramps at the Kansas interchange. So the southbound off, the southbound on, they get reconfigured slightly just to get to a current standard, but the ramps do stay in effect. Then the direct connector to 5th Street, because there's not an intersection, so there's not a skew to deal with, can be directly down into the downtown area, so there's less impact to the neighborhood right here. So here it is in words. Alternative 1 would realign, lengthen, and raise the Kansas Avenue overcrossing at 99 and would remove the existing southbound 99 off-ramp to Kansas and the southbound 99 loop on-ramp from Kansas. Alternative 1 would also construct a 1,900-foot off-ramp from southbound 99 to Needham. That's up to the intersection at the top. It's up in the air, which would serve as an off-ramp from southbound 99 to 5th Street. So that loop that runs into the neighborhood ties into 5th Street, but it has to do so on a curve, which has an impact. The eastbound 132 to southbound 99 direct connector ramp would cross beneath the 5th Street connection. Here's Alternative 2 in words. Alternative 2 would retrofit and reconstruct the Kansas Avenue overpass, but in the same location, no realignment. The existing southbound 99 on and off ramps at Kansas would remain open with some design adjustments, bringing it up to standard. Alternative 2 would also realign the southbound off ramp under Kansas Avenue to the 5th Street two-lane collector distributor, which means continuous flow, no stopping, no intersection. So this is Alternative 2. So here is the detail I mentioned earlier. This is Alternative 1, and you can see that the off-ramp would come up to this intersection. This is elevated, and so this road right here has to start coming upward. That's why the bridge moves to the north, to give more room for the road right there to go up into the air to catch the intersection. South of the intersection, to get back onto to get off of the skew, takes a curve, which runs through the neighborhood there in a more impactful way. Otherwise, the two alternatives are very, very similar, and we'll look at Alternative 2. Alternative 2, the ramps stay in place because there is not an intersection up here. I guess for maybe point of clarity, to get off the freeway here and to get to Needham, you would take the Kansas off-ramp, and then you go across the bridge onto Needham, whereas the other one, you had the intersection at the top, but it had some impacts. So we can graphically see the difference between the two alternatives. And then the cost difference. So Alternative 1 is estimated at a total project cost of $211 million. Alternative 2 is estimated at a total cost of $214 million, which is less than a 1.5% cost difference. And projecting costs out, that's almost negligible difference in price. But those are the estimates today. So considering all that information and the differences between alternative one and alternative two, staff is recommending that the Board of Supervisors adopt and recommend a Caltrans alternative two as the locally preferred alternative for State Route 132 West Expressway project. And with that, I'll turn to the board for any questions.
Matt, can you go back to really quick? The on-ramp, the southbound on-ramp at Kansas, though, changes, right? It's the red.
Yes.
It wraps around, and then it runs parallel, so it doesn't actually hit the traffic right there. It doesn't come till Central Modesto.
That is correct.
On-ramp. Okay.
That is correct.
Is that the way it is in the other, in alternative one also?
So with alternative one, there is not that on-ramp at all. And
okay.
So to get from this area, you would wind up using the, if you're on the service street, you would actually come down to, you would wind up through downtown as well. I'm trying to follow the lines here.
Okay.
It would be back through downtown, almost the same route.
Or you'd go over the overpass, right? You could get on there's no access. It's underneath. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Well, no, the real difference is that with alternative one, the Kansas interchange area loses access.
Yeah.
And that's an impact that we
and there's a lot of businesses right
considered.
There.
Yeah, there is a gas station and a couple of fast food locations and some commercial businesses there.
Okay. Supervisor Olson.
Thank you. I was just wondering if we did traffic modeling on both of the alternatives and if there was a significant difference between the two and which one was better for traffic flow.
So we did do a lot of modeling for both alternatives. We believe that alternative two was superior, and I'll point it out right here. First of all, with the loss of access at Kansas, it certainly takes this traffic and puts it somewhere else. And that's not always good because then you're going to congest another area. But the other big difference that we saw was this intersection. An intersection certainly slows the flow of traffic down. And with two intersections relatively close, it has a definite difference. So alternative two has, from our perspective, a better flow of traffic.
Okay. And as part of this project, and I think this intelligence is pretty dated, if I remember correctly, but wasn't Caltrans talking to us about having to close an intersection altogether as part of the 132 project? And is that still?
So I think you're recalling the I Street closure. Is that the one you're
talking
about?
I think so.
And so it's not a closure, but it is a relocate. So let's go to alternative two. And so the I Street off-ramp would actually be combined up here with the Kansas on-ramp. So this line up here, this would be the off-ramp to I Street. So that I Street and the Kansas on-ramp would share this three-lane facility directly. I mean, this is a high-speed facility here, and would take it into downtown, and then you would connect up where I Street connects today.
Okay, so we would be minimizing
yes.
off-ramp, on-ramps. Excellent.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
CEO Risen.
Yeah, Matt, on alternate two, and this may be the question Chairman Kaye asked, and I just didn't catch it. But the folks taking the loop to go southbound on Kansas there,
yep.
and the folks coming off to get onto 132 from 99 on the southbound, will they have to cross over there so that those wanting to get on the freeway yep. are going to have to cross with?
So if there's somebody coming on southbound 99 that wants to go westbound 132, that's
yep.
what you're asking?
Mm-hmm.
So that connection, let me get my cursor back up here, would actually take the exit, go across the bridge, if you're following my cursor there, mm-hmm. and then it would catch 132 at this intersection right here.
Okay.
Now, that seems slightly inconvenient, but there's not many people traveling southbound 99 to go west. They would have cut across already, most likely, and that's what the modeling shows. There is people doing it, but it's not a huge traffic movement. If you think
so will there be a crossover, though, on southbound 99, those going to I Street? Will they have to literally cross in that short distance?
So the I Street off-ramp, as they come off the 99 and then the Kansas on-ramp, they would both wind up at the same intersection down at Mays Boulevard.
They'd be below.
Well, they're right here, they're on the same roadway, and they would wind up at the same intersection down here, and it's about almost a mile.
So you wouldn't be getting on the freeway any longer than from Kansas?
No, you'll have to go into downtown, as Chairman Chiesa mentioned, at Central Modesto is where the on-ramp would be.
Gotcha.
For the Kansas, exactly right. And it's a long enough stretch where the weave is a non-issue.
Yep.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. All right. I'm going to ask if David Abel wants to come up again, if he has any questions.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Abel, Chairman and Council. In regards to this part of it, I don't really have a question. The whole overall project I see problems with. First off, you're building on stockpiles of contaminated soil that come out of the FMC plant, which people tell me is suitable for building. To date, the FMC plant is still sitting vacant, which is prime highway frontage. And to my knowledge, the reason that it's still sitting vacant is because that soil is still contaminated. And to do what you're doing, to run this, you're creating more of a problem than you're resolving. If you were to do this like you promised and build a four-lane expressway, it'd be one thing, but to build a two-lane, and it is not an expressway, because an expressway to me is something that's straightforward. This thing has got more zigzags than you're going to have a worse nightmare than what you have at Carpenter and Briggsmore, and you're funneling it into two lanes, and you've got six going over the Carpenter and Briggsmore. So not only that, but then you're going to run it through all these neighborhoods, and I really think that you guys ought to take a good consideration into the fact of it. You know, this is a thing that was planned 50-some years ago before all these houses and businesses were even in establishment. And now, all of a sudden, since it got, to me, pushed by the wayside through Measure L, which Measure L to me was more about fixing and repairing the roads and infrastructures, and then it says and build X amount of expressway Highway 132. To me, they should be two different things. They should have been on the ballot that way and not just as one thing. So with that being said, I thank you. I'm not sure whether this was the time to be able to speak about it, but I just heard about this in the paper and wanted to come down and speak. So thank you.
Yep. And David, I appreciate your comments. And knowing that this is just the county picking what we see as the preferred alternative, although it won't be us choosing the preferred alternative as a board here, we will put our best foot forward on what we think as far as the preferred alternative. As far as Measure L is concerned, I can promise you only 28% of the money is for regional projects. It was very clearly stated, and about 65% goes to repairing roads. So just, I don't want to confuse, but it was very clear that 28% only. So the rest of this money will either have to come through PFF, have to come through matching funds, bonds, whatever, from somewhere else. So appreciate you coming in.
Okay. Yeah. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next up we have Bonnie Weiss. Good evening, Bonnie.
Good evening, Chairman Chiesa, board members. Can you hear me?
Hold that thing. There you go.
Good evening. I'm Bonnie Weiss. I'm speaking on behalf of my husband, Brian Weiss. We live at 337 Dakota Avenue in Modesto. And I want to read what I've submitted for your consideration. Overall, we're against the entire 132 West Bypass project, as we don't believe there is an actual need for the bypass, and the cost of this project will be exorbitant. The project itself is critically flawed and will create more traffic congestion and bottlenecks than we currently have. Anytime the number of lanes change, the flow of traffic slows and traffic jams occur. We live on Dakota Road and greatly object to the plan to widen Dakota Road to four lanes connecting 132 to the new bypass. We're concerned that widening Dakota will reduce the value of our property, force us to sell part of our land, and turn Dakota into a parking lot. We also have safety concerns about entering and exiting our property. At an informational meeting I attended, hosted by Caltrans, I expressed my concerns to Supervisor Withrow and to Matt Machado. And I believe Supervisor Withrow told me that they didn't believe the Dakota lane would be made into four lanes. It would remain at two lanes, since it was supposed to be a so-called temporary road. But I'm still concerned that that is happening. If it is a temporary road, it will cost more money and create hardships for those of us who currently live on Dakota and the nearby residents. We believe it would be more efficient and cost less to actually widen 132 itself and continue to 99. Otherwise, the better alternative is to skip Dakota altogether and start working on a permanent plan to connect the bypass to 132. We're requesting that you consider not approving the widening of Dakota Road to four lanes and consider an alternative plan to bypass Dakota entirely. And I just want to add, my husband commuted for over 25 years from Modesto to Livermore. He has taken 132. He's seen what happens when you go from, if 132 is continued just two lanes, basically most of it is just two lanes. They have some passing lanes. Go to two lanes to four lanes on Dakota, we're going to have a parking lot right in front of our house, and we're very concerned. Thank you for your time.
Supervisor Withrow.
Could we, Matt, could you address kind of several of those concerns there that I think are just misinformation that's out there? Let Matt just kind of respond to you, if that's okay. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Sure.
I think the best graphic would be this one. So currently, phase one, it is proposed to be a two-lane road. It will be divided for the safety factor. But the Dakota piece that is raised would be a two-lane road. Now, what we are working on currently is to design that with a turn lane so that the homeowners on the one side have safe access and Slide of Hulling on the other would have safe access with a turn lane. So it would still just be a two-lane travel lane, but a dedicated turn lane just for improved access for those businesses, for the business and the homes. And this is probably a side note from the EIR effort, but she's absolutely correct. It will be better to continue westerly. That environmental effort is going to begin this year. And so the plan is that do the environmental work all the way out to Gates. And as this project comes to fruition with the four-lane expressway, it'll stay on that 132 alignment.
So does that answer, it won't be four lanes on Dakota, the temporary won't be four lanes, and then eventually we are going all the way to Gates. As Matt says, we're starting that work later this year as far as environmental, and then eventually then the traffic on Dakota will be minimal in the end. When this is all done, it will no longer be used. In a perfect world, if we could take this all the way out the Gates, it would probably be below grade on Dakota, and so there wouldn't even be an on or off ramp at Dakota. So, you know, in the end, there should be a substantially less traffic on Dakota when this is done. It won't be initially, as you say, but in the end, in the long term, that's the way this project will end out. The traffic in the neighborhood, as Dave talks about, and in the whole Wood Colony area, should be reduced substantially from people taking shortcuts through that area as when this project's finished. So.
So the reason it says that is because if we didn't continue the effort to go westerly out to Gates, then the build of this project as a four-lane facility would require four lanes on Dakota. But the clarification is that once we have phase one, the two-lane built, and we can do the environmental further west Gates, then there would be no need to continue using Dakota. We would turn it back to a local road, and as Supervisor Withrow mentioned, we would design it with no connection to 132 at the new alignment of 132. Dakota will most likely not have connection there. So Dakota Road will become even a quieter street than it is today.
Yeah. And Supervisor Withrow always reminds me that Dakota will never be a four-lane road.
Well, never.
<He's> constantly. Thank you. Supervisor DeMartini.
I was wondering, on this project overview, has all the land acquisition been made from Dakota Avenue to Highway 99?
No, it's not. There is still a fair amount of acquisition needed right at the connection of 99, a fair amount right in this area. There are a few along the corridor here, people that never sold to Caltrans in the 50s. And then at the western end, there will probably be some need to make this connection work as well. So there's still needs. I don't have the parcel count off the top of my head, but there's a fair amount of them.
Is it the way that this is shown today, is there supposed to be a signal on Mays Boulevard and Dakota?
That's being looked at today with Caltrans to understand if signal warrants would be met. We believe it will be met quite easily, so we're pursuing Caltrans approval to put a signal at Mays and Dakota, and then it also at the northern connection point where the new alignment connects to Dakota. So we're looking at signals at both ends to control traffic, especially in this interim construction phase.
Okay, the way I read the staff report is we're just being asked to pick an alternative as a local preferred project there, but Caltrans still has the ultimate authority to pick alternate.
That is correct.
One or two.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're just saying tonight just what we would prefer. That's not the last word.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. All right. I still have one more speaker card for Maureen Dick.
Good evening, members. Thank you for letting me come up and express my concerns on the 132 West Expressway, the proposed 132 West Expressway. Is there not one person up there that believes this $82 million Phase 1, two-lane, 4-mile, 290-degree turn expressway is the right way to go? Not only is the route crazy, but you're going to let Caltrans cap the toxic stockpiles and let everyone drive over them and be exposed to the contaminants. I also believe if you're realigning the Kansas ramps, then you're going to be moving the stockpile dirt, sludge, toxic sludge again. The Modesto Bee stated back in January 28th of this year, state officials for years have said no one is getting sick or dying from the dirt laced with heavy metals, including barium, strontium, and lead in the fenced-off hills. Well, the fenced-off hills are really toxic sludge from the holding ponds at FMC. They're not hills, they're toxic sludge. And I just wonder, has anybody gone out, asked families living in the area about their health? Have you asked anyone how many people are suffering? How many different sicknesses and diseases there are? How many people have died? Have you asked? Do you care? And that's my concern. It's just that easy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Maureen. Any other comments? Yep. Come on up and state your name for the record.
Hi, my name's Bernice Hendon. I live at 225 North Dakota, so I'm kind of right off of the Mays area and 132. So my concern is I just purchased my property 8 years ago and unfortunately wasn't told about any of this. We moved out there because I've spent the last 33 years using 132 to go to Palo Alto because my daughter's a Stanford patient and has been for 33 years. So my house sits so close to the road that I've been told through, I don't have names, but I've had several different people at my house saying that it's going to be a full take, then it's not going to be a take. So it's like on again, off again. And right now, if they put a stoplight at 132 and Dakota, we just had an incident here a month ago. There was a tanker truck that had went down on 99. They were diverting traffic through Dakota. It took me 25 minutes. I'm a registered nurse. I get called in for emergency situations to get to the hospital right away. I couldn't get out of my driveway because nobody would let me out. And I sat there for 20 minutes, timed on my phone, waiting for somebody to let me turn to get out. I have a disabled child that we can call the ambulance anytime, and I'm concerned, how are they going to be able to get into me if all this is backed up? And everybody keeps saying, oh, they're only going to use it for a short period of time, but we know we're all creatures of habit. And once you find a short way to go, that becomes your preferred route. And even if they decide, oh, they're not going to need it anymore, you're still going to, they just opened Dakota and Pellendale back up across the railroad tracks. They had closed it for a while. It's opened back up. Tons of people are using it again. So, you know, I have two concerns. One is everybody keeps telling me my house is going to be taken because it's too close to the road. Then it's not. And then other people are saying, oh, don't worry about it. So I don't understand, if Dakota's truly going to be a temporary route, why do we have to use it at all?
So the phase one will definitely not need any right away from your home. So you're, that's a good thing. The ultimate build, which goes out to Gates Road, mm-hmm. will not have connectivity at Dakota. So if people get used to using Dakota, they'll not be able to use it once 132 goes through, because there won't be any connectivity there. So we think the traffic will decrease in the future.
But even if you widen it now, I'm already so close to the road.
So
you're going to widen it now, and I have two bedrooms right there that my grandchildren sleep in. And I don't believe anybody would allow their children to be 12 feet from the road. That's going to be an expressway.
So the widening will be going towards the east, because that's where the additional right-of-way that the county currently owns today. So there will be improvements on the shoulders, but the travel lane won't get any closer to your home than it is today.
Are you at, by Salida Hulling, across from Salida Hulling?
I'm street. Directly across the okay. street from it.
So the right-of-way...
Take is going to come from Salida, yeah. not from the residents.
Right.
Yeah, so there will be no land taken from the residents on the west side of Dakota.
Okay, so. But what are they going to do to protect us from this amount of traffic now that's going to be coming down for this so-called six-year span?
Well, it'll
because that one day, like I said, I'm serious. I sat there for 20 minutes just waiting to get out of my own driveway.
What are you going to do at the intersection of Dakota and Mays
so
Boulevard?
They'll both be signalized, so there will be breaks in traffic. But otherwise, the road configuration will be nearly the way it is today, with the addition of a turn lane, which will help access. I mean, there still has to be a break in traffic. But we think the added turn lane will benefit both the residential side and the Salida Hulling
side. And what's the speed that's going to be allowed to go down Dakota now?
I think the design speed there is going to be a bit slower, 45 to 55 in that range. Certainly not more than 55.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Maureen. Oh, no, you're not Maureen. I'm sorry.
Bernice.
That was good.
Bernice.
Bernice. Thank you, Bernice. All right, anyone else? Okay, seeing none. Bring it back. Any comments?
Yeah, I just will, you know, support the staff recommendation here, alternative two. There's so much misinformation, just as Bernice had thought she was going to lose her house. Found out tonight that's not going to happen. There's a lot of information out there that's whether intentional or unintentional, that has been spread about this project. And so this project will be a great project when it's done, when we get it all the way to Gates. This will be less traffic in front of your house, less lives will be saved as a result of this. And as with any, you know, we wish we had the money and we could do this whole thing all the way. But with any journey, we've got to take the first step. And unless we take this first step, we won't begin it. And so in the end, this project will save lives, move goods and services in and out of this county. And so we appreciate people coming here and hearing the facts and being able to see what's really going on, as compared to what's being spread out there by a few who are doing everything they can to stop this project. So we very much care about this. I think it was Maureen With regard to the stockpiles and things like that, this has been studied six ways from Sunday. The Department of Toxic Substance Control has done all kinds of studies, and we feel that this is the best way to take care of whatever is there. And we wouldn't. There's none of us here that would be a part of anything that we didn't think was solving that problem, or that would endanger anybody that lives out there. So it's. But we very much appreciate your concerns, and we have the same concerns, and we have had those concerns for at least 6 years as this project has been moving forward, and we feel we're at a spot where those things are being solved. So, and nobody will ever agree with us. That's part of our job here. We're never going to be able to make everybody 100% happy here, and we understand that. And I can see head shaking and thinking that we don't. There are things that we just won't agree on. But I think in the end that this project will save lives and move goods and services in and out of this county. I wish we could have had it 50 years ago at probably a tenth of the cost, and probably 100 more people would be alive today because of it. But we're doing it now, and so I'm very much in favor of this.
Yeah. I would like, we talk about these things. I just want you to know we talk about things a lot, and we have outreach meetings that aren't very well attended. Sometimes we think that everyone knows this. It's printed in the B. It's printed somewhere, but that's not the case. And we need to continue with Caltrans and Stanislaus County and Modesto and the COG to try and get information out so that there's not any misinformation. Because I can feel what, if you're worried that they were going to take your property and no one's approached you yet, I can see that. The alternative number two is by far the best alternative. And I guess I liken this into, because Supervisor Withrow said it, we have to take a baby step. If you look at the Kern and Clarabelle and think about where we were when I got on the board talking about it, and we didn't think there was any way we were going to complete it all the way to Oakdale Road. It was impossible. It's $110 million that we spent out there, and we didn't have $110 million, quite frankly. And we built the first section, about 2 miles, a couple of miles, plus the overpass. We're working on the overpass, and it came together. Sometimes you have to bet. We know that Measure L is such a small portion of this total project. We're going to need state help. We might even need federal help. But if we don't do anything, then it will sit there for another 50 years. So I think this is the beginning of the first step. We're at that spot. And hopefully it will look just like the Kern and Clarabelle with fewer entrances, and that will make it a true expressway so it doesn't impact. There is no intent to make four lanes on Dakota, just so you know. And I jokingly said it, but it's true. Supervisor Withrow has assured me 100 times that he will never allow there to be four lanes. But three lanes make sense with a turn lane for everyone. It's a safety issue. Slide of Hulling needs it on the left-hand turn side. And for all the houses that are on the west side, they need it too for a safety issue. So I think this is a step in the right direction. I'm going to support this action. As we move forward.
Okay. I'm going to support it also. Just as a little history on this, my father sold part of the land for the right-of-way in 1958. At the time, we lived near the corner of Kansas Avenue in Dakota. And in 1958, he sold it to the state. I don't remember how many acres it was, but maybe 3 or 4 acres or so. And that was in 58. The road's never been built. And so it's really time to get going on this thing. I just can't believe that we have a road project like this that's been lingering for 60 years. It's just terrible. Only in California.
So in 1958, since you're only 39, you couldn't have known that your parents. You heard the story, right?
Yeah, I heard the story there. I'm not going to be 39 next month.
Yeah. So, any other comments? All right. Pleasure of the board.
I will make a motion to approve staff recommendations of alternative two.
All right. We have a motion on alternative two.
I'll second that.
And we have a second. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matt. Okay. Seeing no other business, we have no scheduled matters. We'll move on to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the California Fish and Game Commission regarding a petition to list foothill yellow-legged frog as a threatened species.
Okay. Refer to the Fish and Wildlife Committee. And are there any Board of Supervisor reports? Supervisor DeMartini?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I just would like to say that for the first time ever, Stan Sarah hit the $2 billion mark last week. And I don't know what our final returns are going to be, but it's going to be in the 15 to 20% return this year. So we had a terrific year, far beyond what our estimate was at 7 1/4 percent. So we had a great year, yeah. And we're at $2 billion. And it wasn't that long ago, I think probably 2010 or so, we were below $1 billion. So we've had some great investments, and we have a really good board there who's underappreciated.
Thank you. Any other board?
We need to get an accountant on that board.
We don't. No, we don't. We have a very good supervisor who represents us there. Jim, you're doing a great job.
Okay. One thing I wanted to mention, it was pretty good. I got a text from Captain Jim Gordon today with the Sheriff's Department talking about the radios that we purchased last year, the mobile units, and they receive and can transmit in analog and digital. Right now we have a crew up on the Mariposa Fire, and he said it's a game changer for them because they can talk to the Mariposa Sheriff's Department, they can talk down to the Sheriff's Department down in this area, they can switch the channel, talk to the fire, and it was really a public safety concern when we started this whole looking at the radio system. So they are just ecstatic with the way they're operating up there, and it's great for our guys. And I'm glad they're helping with evacuations right now. So just wanted to pass that on. It was a big thank you too from Captain Gordon. So, all right. Seeing nothing. Oh, legislative fiscal management report.
Yeah, you know, as a matter of course, I rarely would bring anything to you on the state legislative level unless I thought there was some direct county impact, but. There's currently circulating up in Sacramento a very onerous bill, AB 1250, that has actually been approved out of the Senate Governance and Finance Committee. And if this bill was to pass, it would severely limit our ability to contract out with nonprofits and other professionals when it comes to doing a lot of the services we do. And so. Probably within next board meeting or two, we're going to be bringing back a resolution with your permission to take a formal position on this legislation.
That'd be great. Everyone's okay with that? Perfect. Okay. Seeing nothing else for the good of the order, this meeting is adjourned.